It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Hey, this is the Tarncast. This is your host, J.D. Walsh. Today we're supposed to have Steven Seagal in, however he canceled at the last second, but we do have another guest, Todd Robert Anderson. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Well,
an honor to be filling in for Mr. Steven Seagal.
Yeah, it was kind of a last minute thing. I should have known better to rely on his word, but you know, lesson learned.
He's got a lot going on with, his buddy Putin and flying back and forth to Russia. He may have to go at a moment's notice.
Yeah, he also fights crime in real life.
He fights crime. Yeah, in real life. Yep.
So I don't know if you know about the podcast. Have you listened to the podcast?
I haven't. Okay.
Well, the podcast is we kind of go through your movie collection and just kind of talk about your movie collection.
Sure.
And did you bring any of your movies?
My entire video collection.
Entire video collection.
I don't know if you noticed the oak shelves.
Okay. Yes.
That
this
my guys
wonderful.
Brought in. Yeah.
So what I like to do is I like to just kind of pick a random movie and then we'll talk about it and then kind of maybe connected to your narrative as you kind of went through life.
Sure.
How does that sound?
That sounds great.
All right. Well, you have the trilogy here of the Karate Kid, one, two, and three.
It's a quadrilogy. That's not a word, but that's what they call it in marketing these days.
I didn't even see that. There's four.
And in fact, I have all five, including the Karate Kid reboot with Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Who's Chinese and therefore practices Kung Fu and not karate, but they still called it the Karate Kid.
Right.
I don't know.
What did you think of the newest incarnation?
The Jackie Chan, Will Smith Jr. one? Honestly, I was surprised at how entertained I was.
You dug it.
Yeah, I did.
I just watched it again. I watched the first one with my kids.
With the Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, the original.
And Pat Morita.
And what's weird is to see it through the prism of, being in your early 40s and watching that movie, it doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like a documentary about this boy who moved to Tarzana.
Yeah.
You know? It's really fascinating to me, like, how much of my childhood is tied up into that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. The thing I remember most about that movie is really Elizabeth Shue making out with Ralph Macchio. Because I think that was the first time as a kid that I saw, like, an open-mouthed hot kiss in a movie like that, I enjoyed it.
When I watched it with my kids, it's fun to rewatch movies with your kids because you can start kind of looking at other characters in the movie. Instead of focusing in on Daniel LaRusso or Elizabeth Shue, you can focus in on other characters.
Sure.
And what I loved was there was one character who I'd never heard of before who's in the Cobra Kai. Like, I'd never kind of focused in on this one guy.
Uh-huh.
There is a voice of reason within the Cobra Kai. In every scene where somebody is fighting Daniel or picking on him, there is a kid, there's one guy who's like, he's had enough, Johnny. No, let's not do this. Come on, Johnny. Get off him, Johnny. There's a guy who is trying
He's like a smaller guy in the Cobra Kai?
I believe he
has... Like blonde hair?
Yeah, he has kind of longer hair, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he might be the same one who has to hurt Daniel LaRusso at the end of the movie.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he is the conscious of the Cobra Kai, which I just thought they were all just a band of assholes. But there is a guy in it who, like, got into the wrong fraternity.
Right,
it's like,
right.
What are we doing?
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. And in my film collection, I'm pretty sure I have an 80s, sex comedy, I guess you'd call them.
Yeah.
You know, where the young fellas will go to a spring break or whatnot. It may have actually been called Spring Break. I don't know. But I think that actor is the star. He's like the nerdy, virginal star of, I think it's Spring Break, or something like that. Or Fraternity Vacation, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's in one of those.
I'm seeing a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to hear is from the 80s and the 90s.
80s and 90s.
What you believe was the scariest movie that you saw?
In the 80s or the 90s?
Yeah.
Or, probably.
Because I lose it a little bit after the 2000s. I'm not really up on Saw movies. But like 80s and 90s, like I've seen all of the Friday, the 13th.
Well, I love the Friday the 13th franchise, but I don't think it's scary. John Carpenter's The Thing freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
That scared me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scariest one I can think of off the top
I've got
of my
one
head.
For you.
Okay.
When a Stranger Calls.
That was that 80s? I thought it was
I guess it could be 70s? Late 70s. Yeah, it easily could be late 70s.
And then
70s.
Remade in the aughts.
Yeah.
As a PG-13 piece of garbage.
But that concept of the call coming from within the house is, in my opinion, one of the scariest concepts.
Here's the thing about that movie. First act is one of the scariest first acts in a movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But once that first act is over, it's just a cat and mouse cop chasing a killer thing.
Yeah.
Who eventually gets back to Carol Kane or
something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like after that first act, I don't know. It's not that scary.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
But it is a very scary first act for sure.
Just watched Home Alone with the kids. Have you watched Home Alone
with the kids? Oh, yeah. My kid is a huge Home Alone fan.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really well constructed, isn't it? Like when you watch it again from, like, because you write, right?
Sure.
It's really interesting, the intricacy, and also how they bend over backwards to make the mom not the worst human being on the face of the earth. You know, like,
but
everything goes wrong.
But that's, like, when I saw, I was really too old for Home Alone when it came out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wound up seeing it, I think, at some point, because it was so popular, but I that was one of the things I couldn't get past. I was like, this is a story about deeply irresponsible parents who are so oblivious and have had clearly too many children that they can't even keep track of them and will get all the way to Europe before realizing one of them is missing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's like you and she's very sweet, obviously, and does everything she can to get back while her husband, John Hurd, just waits for a plane, which is the only reasonable thing to do.
Right, right, right.
But it was just hard. I just couldn't get past that.
Yeah.
I was like, well, okay. So this is, I mean, from a kid's perspective, it's a fantastic fantasy movie about actually being left alone while your parents are gone.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole, it was so contrived for me that I couldn't get
it's
past
it's definitely
it.
Contrived. Yeah. If so, you're at a place where it's contrived,
yeah. Yeah. Watching it, but that's what I'm saying. It was like I had come into like my critical self when that movie first came out.
Right.
And it was for younger kids and not for me necessarily, but I was a huge John Hughes fan. Mm-hmm. So it interested me on a certain level. But watching it with my kid, that changed everything. I was like, oh, now that I'm old and not, you know, young and angry, I was like, oh, yeah, this is sweet. It's nice. Yeah.
You know, it's also sweet. Stamps.com.
Oh, yeah.
Stamps.com. I don't know about you, but I'm always going to the post office.
You go to the post office all the time.
All the time. And, you know, I wish there was a way that I could do it at home. And now you can with Stamps.com.
Yeah.
Use the promo code TONN, T-O-N-N, and you will get a discounted a measuring, what are those called?
Scale.
Scale. There's a measuring stick, I was going to call it. a scale, and also $90 worth of free stamps.
That's great.
Stamps.com.
What a great deal.
Yeah.
What a great deal.
All right. Well, let's get back to your movie collection. You know, I'm just going to take a random shot.
Uh-huh.
And let's talk about The Omen.
Oh, okay.
The original Omen.
Yeah, sure. With Gregory Peck.
Yes. First of all, which of the first three original Omens is your favorite?
You know, I would go with the first. I mean, yeah, the first
one. Okay, I disagree,
one.
But go on.
Yeah, well, my second favorite is the third one with Sam Neill. Final
I also
Conflict.
Disagree. But
your favorite
go
one
on.
Is Omen 2.
That is correct. You got it right on your third guess.
As opposed to the Omen 4, because it's the fourth.
No.
And then there's the remake.
Right.
But you don't like any of that.
No. I like the first one. I like the third one.
Uh-huh.
But that second one where he's like in boarding school.
Yeah.
Is, in my opinion, the best. Because he's... Because there's the element of him being sort of just imagine yourself when you were 11 years old and the choices that you made where you hurt people's feelings. But instead of hurting people's feelings, you could actually hurt them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like
right.
That element of having the devil as a pre-adolescent.
Right.
I think is pretty fascinating.
Right. It takes the bully thing to a new level. I like the first one, I think, mostly because I've been to so many, at this point, so many children's birthday parties.
That you're always
and
thinking
I
about.
I often think how much better this would be if a nanny were to jump off the roof and hang herself.
I love you, Jacob. Everything for you, Connor.
If that happened, I would really enjoy those parties more, I think.
Yep.
As they stand.
I mean, I love the concept of the third one, which is, right, like, let's kill the babies. Like, a baby was born on this day.
Yeah.
Let's kill every baby, which I think Game of Thrones eventually used. But all three of the movies, I think, are fantastic. And I wish that I had an app where I could, like, play the religious music. That, you know, like whenever he looks at somebody, like if you could have like where you're at the post office, which you don't have to go to with stamps.com. But, you know, if somebody upset you, you could just have
right.
that. Oh, say, oh, you know, I think would be, I don't know.
Actually,
that's not an app.
I had, when I first moved to LA, I had a copy on CD of the score from John Carpenter's Halloween, a score written and performed by John Carpenter himself.
Really?
The famous music, ding, 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 ding. And the whole score, like the whole CD, is basically that.
Yeah.
And variations of that.
Yeah.
With the occasional sting of, wah!
Yeah,
so I would drive around L.A. in between auditions, and I'd sit at traffic lights and roll my windows down and just crank that music. And I wouldn't look at people. I would keep looking forward like everything was normal and just see people in my peripheral vision looking at me, like, concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the power of music.
Let's talk a little bit about Halloween. I see that's also on the in the DVDs that you brought to my home.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to tell you, my favorite Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I already lost you with the second Omen. But
no, that's fine. I mean, I don't think the Omen is the greatest horror movie of all time. So
right.
it's a
good
franchise.
Yeah,
they're okay.
For me, I love Season of the Witch.
Oh, sure. The one without Mike Myers.
Yeah. I still think about that when Halloween's coming and I see a sign that says 2 more weeks to Halloween. I'm hearing the song.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about, for those of
it's a real earworm.
Yeah. For those who don't know the plot of Halloween 2.
Halloween 3
is it's not in the canon of all the other Mike Myers movies. He in this one, it's a totally different story where somebody has made children's masks and spread them and basically like given them away for free or something. But everybody wants these masks and they're supposed to watch a big show on Halloween night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to trigger something in the mask to like... Then the mask will strangle the children, or bugs will come out of the
It'll
mask.
Turn the children into a pile of bugs and
right,
shit.
Right.
Yeah.
And the whole time there is a song playing that is 2 more weeks to Halloween,
2 more weeks till Halloween, silver shamrock. Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's not getting out of your head anytime soon.
You know what I also love? I also love anytime house painting.
Oh.
Yeah, for exterior and interior painting. You can talk to Young Park. His telephone number is 626-359-5000. Or you can fax him. And that's what I'm looking for in somebody who paints. I'm looking for a fax number, 213-389-9799. 6.
That's crazy. I just got an estimate on exterior painting from that
from Young.
That company, that
and,
guy.
And how did you like the estimate?
It was a more reasonable estimate than any of the other estimates I've gotten.
Oh, well, that's nice. I like the work that they do. They also did my house.
Oh,
really,
great.
Really great. Really, really great stuff.
That's great.
All right. Well, let's go back to the movies. Mm. Let's talk about a movie that you wish you owned that you don't own. Because to me, I look at your collection and I think, there's never been a movie that you thought for a moment, hey, I should own that, and then didn't go out and purchase the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a lot of other movies that I don't know why I own. Like, that's a thing. You know, I have a copy of Equilibrium. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why. Absolutely.
Equilibrium is a movie that, like, right now, I don't remember anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen it several times, but I don't remember. I don't know why I have it. I don't know why I've seen it so many times. It's just one of those things.
Jewel of the Nile. I see Jewel of the Nile.
Yeah, that's a sequel to Romancing the Stone.
Yeah, you don't. I'm not seeing Romancing the Stone. I'm assuming somewhere you have it, but I'm looking at a copy of Jewel of the Nile, and it's also kind of tipped. It's not pressed in against the
well, that's
shelves.
A box set. If you look more closely at the top, it says Romancing the Stone.
So it's both.
It's both.
It's very nice.
You can both.
You know, I was just thinking about that movie. I was thinking about Romancing the Stone the other day, and are you doing the same thing with your son? Your son's a little older than... Your son is how old?
9.
9. Okay, so I've got a 9-year-old girl, but then I also have a 7 and a 4-year-old. So I think about those kind of movies because my wife will be like, oh, let's watch a movie with the kids. And I'll say to her, okay, but I don't think it has to be like a movie that's aimed specifically at children.
Sure.
Like, I want to expand it a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, like a Groundhog's Day.
Sure.
Or a Truman Show, which the kids loved.
Okay.
My 9-year-old also loved the movie The Game, which I haven't told my wife that I showed her, but she absolutely loved the concept and the execution of The Game.
And was she disturbed by any of the violence in the film?
You know, it's not too bad. There was one part in the movie that was a problem, which was when he's being framed for stuff, and there are photos of, like, he goes into a hotel room that's got, like, photos.
Oh, photos of, like, a dead naked lady or something?
Yeah, and then also when he's getting the questionnaire at the beginning of the movie, there are some embarrassing questions that he's asked.
Right.
But other than that, it's actually a pretty good kids' movie, so run out. by the way, if you are going to go to Amazon, use our promo code TODD, and we get a little piece of the action.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh, TONN, sorry.
TONN.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm sitting here.
That's probably why we haven't made any money. We're probably making a lot of money for Todd Fassbender or somebody. So, all right, let's go back to the collection. I see the Brat Pack. So this is a collection of 3 movies. Uh-huh. By the way, let's talk about your love of box collections.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what it could even just be a collection of Michael J. Fox movies.
Sure.
Yeah. You love the box collection. Let's talk about that.
I do love a good box set. I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
A big reason that I got into collecting all these DVDs is not just the movies themselves, but the box art. I think it has to do with the fact that I spent a lot of time working in video stores as a kid, and I kind of obsess about movie marketing art. So that's what I like about these versus having a digital collection on your that you can have now on your in the cloud or whatever. And then the box sets often have very cool. I mean, sometimes like the Michael J. Fox is negligible box art. I got that because I like Michael J. Fox.
Right. Yeah, fair enough.
And they all came together.
Right.
And a lot of those movies before that box set, they weren't available in enhanced 16:9.
Okay, so let's I'm going to go take a look at which movies you want to see in 16:9. So you want to see these movies on the big screen?
I wanted to see them. Like, once I got a flat screen TV, I wanted to see these movies in their proper aspect
ratio. So you wanted to make sure that you saw the director's pure vision of Greedy,
mm-hmm,
For Love or Money,
yeah,
and The Hard Way.
Right.
Now, I didn't mention The Secret of My Success because I actually love The Secret of My Success.
Well, The Secret of My Success,
yeah,
really, as far as the construction of a movie,
mm-hmm,
is the worst of the four of them.
Why?
Well, because it's basically just a music montage for an hour and 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a music montage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also my favorite one in that box set as well. And really, I only bought that box set for The Secret of My Success and The Hard Way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like The Hard Way as bad as it is because it's got James Woods and Michael J. Fox. And who would have thought that
would be something
you would do?
I mean, question. So when you look at this, do you think to yourself, all right, well, the box set is going to cost X amount of dollars and I'll get four movies,
right,
two of which I don't care about.
Right.
But if I just got Secret of My Success and The Hard Way, that it's going to be the same amount of money, so I might as well get the extra two movies.
In fact, I think it might have been more to get just two movies than to get the four. So, I look at those as, like, extras. Those are extras, DVD extras.
Like, the director added the movie Greedy to the DVD extra of Secret of My Success.
Yeah, here you go. Well, I mean, the thing about Michael J. Fox, too, is, you know, I grew up on him, huge fan of his big hit movies, but he made a lot of bad movies.
Yes.
But because he's one of the few,
mm-hmm,
movie stars that I can watch the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch Casualties of War,
yep,
with him and Sean Penn.
That's interesting that's the movie that you would point to as a terrible movie. Because I feel like at least he was trying. He was trying to do something.
No, they were trying.
There are a lot of terrible movies that are the one with the, like, Curly Sue or what's the
like
one?
Like Life with Mikey.
Yeah. That are literally worse than Greedy.
Oh, yeah. No, you're making a good point. Casualties of War isn't the worst. But I'm just saying, that's also an unpleasant movie.
Right, yeah,
you know, it's
true.
A movie about rape during the Vietnam War. It is unpleasant.
Right, and the music montages that are throughout that are also sort of weird.
Tonally
different. Or maybe that's just the DVD extra that on Casualties of War, which is Secret of My Success.
Yeah, that's like De Palma actually directed Secret of My Success under a pseudonym, and then that's an extra now on Casualties of War.
This leads us, of course, to Back to the Future,
uh-huh,
since we're going to get into Michael
Great
J. Fox.
Trilogy.
Back to the Future. One quick thing about Michael J. Fox. We were talking about him and his terrible movies. I did listen to an interview with him where he kind of admitted that and talked about what happened after Doc Hollywood when he started getting Parkinson's,
mm-hmm,
and he knew it was going south. And he literally was like, what can I do to get the most amount of money in a short amount of time,
right,
so that my family will be set up? And he signed some Disney deal for three movies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it paid him $10 million. I don't know if that's the case, but something around there. And then he just churned out these terrible movies with the idea of like, hey, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that makes sense looking back. I love Doc Hollywood. That's a good one.
Yep.
Never been released properly.
Right.
You can only get a pan and scan copy of
that. Is
that
true?
That is absolutely true.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's aggravating.
Is it tough when you watch that? Like, when you watch that, would you be like, oh, this is really distracting? It's not Lawrence of Arabia. It's not like, oh, I can't see the vistas.
That's a good point. I mean, there's still a lot to enjoy about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I do find it I am an aspect ratio guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like most people don't even know what that is, but
right,
it bothers me. Panned and scanned and letterboxed movies bother me. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. So now, Back to the Future.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about it. Obviously, the first one, fantastic. What do you love about the first one? And then give me your thoughts on the second and the third one, if you had to rate them.
Well, obviously, the first one is the best.
Right.
There's no two ways about that. I love it. It's sort of a perfect adventure comedy,
mm-hmm,
I think.
Yeah.
It's
so also well constructed. I mean,
it's
when you go back
constructed,
and you know, save the clock tower with the phone number.
Which is a really hard thing to do, I think, to make a time travel movie,
mm-hmm,
where at the halfway point you're, mm-hmm, not going, well, wait a second.
Yeah.
It's so charming and fun. I think part of it is that it is a comedy and it's sort of a teenager coming of age, maybe kind of story thing. So you forgive the time travel logic in that particular one. So yeah, it's perfectly constructed. The sequels, I like the second one more than the third one. But I enjoy them. You know, those are more ones where you're like, wait, what? How did that? That doesn't make the time travel stops making sense because the movies aren't as solid as the first one.
Right, right, right.
But again, you got Michael J. Fox.
Yep.
You got Thomas F. Wilson. You got Christopher Lloyd. And it's fun. I think it's fun. I think they're fun movies, even though that they put Elizabeth Shue in the other, and that was kind of weird.
Right.
But she's barely in it, so it's not that distracting.
I did a TV show with Christopher Lloyd. I did a show called Tremors the Series.
Oh, yeah, I recall that.
Yeah, it's so I got to do a couple scenes with him, and we sat in a car for a couple hours together, just chit chatting. And he asked me where I was from, and I said that I was from Madison, Wisconsin. And he said, "Oh yeah, I knew a nurse up in Madison when I was shooting Dennis the Menace. I would go up on the weekend." I was like, "Oh, that's great. That's great.
Okay. Chris."
Yeah.
Okay.
Really, really fantastic. Okay.
I have questions about that Tremors series.
Yeah, go for it.
So, in addition to Christopher Lloyd, you worked with, speaking of Michael J. Fox.
Michael Gross. Yep.
Burt Gummer.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, so here's my question. So, you did three episodes.
Four.
Four?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, there was, the first two were earlier on in the season. It was a one season show. But then the last two episodes you did, there was no Michael Gross.
Yep, true.
And you were doing a lot of the heavy lifting for with the comedy, the comedy relief, which I think kind of fell to the Burt Gummer character
lot. Yeah, yeah.
What was going on? Where was Michael Gross?
Well, to go back just a little bit, so I auditioned, I had the audition, it was like January 2nd. Was the audition. So it was just out of Christmas break.
And you're hungover.
Yeah, yeah, I am.
You feel terrible.
Exactly. Yeah. But not because of the drinking. I feel terrible because a new year is coming. Like a tsunami of depression.
And you're still acting.
Yeah, exactly.
I go through that.
And honestly, God, first audition that I was so sick. I wasn't hungover. I was actually just I had the shakes and stuff. Again, it sounds like I have an alcohol problem.
Yeah,
I do have an alcohol problem. I just don't want to talk about it right here.
That's fair.
Right now,
it's your show.
That's a different podcast.
It's your show.
When I'm on your show, when I come to your house,
then I can.
We can talk about it.
Start.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was able to move it. They didn't find their guy, so a week later I went in because I knew it was in my wheelhouse. Went in, auditioned, and then had to go down. I booked it just as a guest star. Went down to Mexico.
Is that where they shot the whole show?
Oh, my God.
Mexico?
Here's my take, is that I know that Mexico is a beautiful country. And with beautiful mountains and beautiful seas.
Sure.
But we filmed in border town Mexico, which is Rosarito, Tijuana area. So this is essentially America's urinal. It is because of us. It is our mistake for treating this this area of their country like it's a frat house on a Sunday morning. That's
sure.
what it feels like.
Yeah.
So I was stuck there for a week, and I filmed it. It went very, very well. And then there was talk about maybe making me a regular, which would be great because I had never been a regular before. Before then, and I got a call from my manager, and he said, "Come in, Chuck Lorre, who created Dharma and Greg, who I had done some Dharma and Gregs with, wants you to come in, or wants you to read the script because he wrote a new show with you in mind."
Oh, wow.
And so he wants you to read the script. And meanwhile, there's an offer on the table, and screw it, I'll just tell you how much it was. It was like, I say yes to this money, to Tremors, and it's immediately $60,000.
Yeah.
Or I can go down the road of the other one.
And see what happens.
Yeah. So I read the script.
This is a bird in hand, two in the bush.
Yes, exactly,
kind of
exactly. I read the script. It's about a character named Charlie who has a brother who he moves in with. I know it's kind of
a far-fetched. Does his brother have a kid?
Yeah, he has a kid, and they're kind of opposites. Charlie and Alan are opposites, and I was going to play the part of Charlie. Just kidding. I was going to play the part of Alan. Now, here's the truth, is that Hollywood is full of a lot of those stories about, like, oh, this was written for me, and I was supposed to, and I don't know how much he was thinking it was for me. Uh-huh. I was a little young for the part. I mean, John Cryer is a good 9 years older than me, but I did turn it down to go with the bird in the hand because I knew the Tremors, the series, would last 6 or 7 years.
Is this a career regret for you? Because
it's not a big one.
I think you made the right choice.
Yeah, it's not a huge one because it wasn't that hard a choice.
Right.
It was $60,000. Or a possibility. It wasn't like it was being offered to me.
Right.
It was more, hey, it might go some, you know, that kind of thing.
And people do that all the time.
Yeah.
And you never know, like, too, like, with stuff like that, that sometimes they're saying these things and they're blowing smoke up your ass because they want to get you committed to it so then they can terrify John Cryer into commit. Well, we're going to go with this other guy then if you can't make up your mind. And then he's like, okay, I'm John Cryer, okay.
That's exactly it. But it was very, so I turned it down and I went down to Mexico, and we shot for, I think it was probably another 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Michael Gross had another movie that he had to do. So there were a couple, maybe it was the movie. Maybe it was Tremors 4 that they were going to go shoot. And so he had to leave the series. So there are a couple episodes where he goes to some sort of camp or...
Well, yeah, they mentioned... it's just like, where's Bert? He's off at some kind of convention where he shoots at stuff.
Yep. That reminds me of our new sponsor, Safaris Unlimited. Have you ever wanted to hunt big game? Well, now you can do it. We have connected with the good people in Zimbabwe. We will fly you over to Africa. You can hunt big game like they did back in the 50s. Just call the number 1-800-SAFARI. That is 1-800-SAFARI. Tremors.
Tremors.
Actually, that got us to... We were talking about Michael J. Fox and mm-hmm. Back to the Future.
Are you excited about the new Tremors film? Having been part of the Tremors universe?
I'm not. And the reason why is if I had to... Because I really like Michael Gross. He couldn't have been nicer to me.
Yeah.
Because obviously I saw him as a dad-like figure.
Sure.
But I mean, I didn't connect with him like, oh my God, we totally were really connected as a really... But he was very kind to me. But I believe the second star in that movie is Jamie Kennedy, right?
Yeah, those are five.
Yeah, and I'm unable to watch anything that Jamie Kennedy said.
Did you see?
He's my least favorite of all the Kennedy family.
Did you see his New Year's Eve special from a few years back?
Yes.
And that didn't make you love him?
That was fantastic.
It was marvelous.
Yeah. It does beg the question of, like, what is he aware of and what is he not aware of? I think he probably looks at it as, like, that was just performance art. But you watch that and you know they're trying to create some sort of show. There is supposed to be some irony, but not that level of irony.
I think it's... The fascinating thing about it is it just the whole thing seemed grossly incompetent.
Yes.
It didn't seem like anybody knew what was happening.
Yeah.
I don't think the camera operators had ever touched a camera before.
Yeah.
Like, they were constantly... And half the time, they'd come back from commercial, and Jamie would be talking to somebody, mm-hmm. and he wasn't aware that they were back.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great.
Yeah.
It was great television.
It does make me think a lot about this new genre. So we had the genre of the terrible movies that you would go see. For example, The Room, or Birdemic, or just these movies that were made by terrible directors, and you go see them ironically. I'm sort of fascinated by this
movie. Do you like The Room more than Birdemic?
To be honest, I haven't seen either of them.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. I did watch the trailer for Birdemic, mm-hmm. and what I loved about it, if you get a chance to see it, it's online. Go to our... We'll put it up on the website. There's an opening shot that is like 40 seconds long of a freeway with nothing happened. Then we cut to the other side of the freeway, and that's another 40-second shot. And then we go... I think then there's a shot of the cliffs, and that lasts for about 40 seconds. And then at the end, there's a shot of a town with some CGI-eyed birds who are pooping on the town in an explosive way, like actual explosives.
Right, yeah. Right.
And what I'm curious about is what made them, at 40 seconds when they were editing this trailer,
right.
what made them say, that's enough? You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Because
40 seconds is a lot.
Yeah, 40 seconds is a lot. But if it had gone 41 seconds, would the director have said, it's a little long? You know what I'm saying? Or was he... like, what made... Because he had an edit point.
Yeah.
Yours and my's edit point would be much shorter, maybe 2 seconds, yeah. maybe 3 seconds. But at around 28 seconds, his brain's going, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh. yeah, yeah. But then at 40 seconds, he's like, and cut. You know what I'm saying? And that, yeah. the fact that he has an edit in his brain is interesting to
so,
me.
So, the director of Birdemic
yeah.
cut the trailer...
Yes, I'm assuming.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, usually they hire
right.
like a like trailer guy.
Trailer park to come in
yeah,
and do it.
Yeah. yeah. Well, a buddy of mine, when he first started editing, that's what he did. That was like his first paying gig was editing trailers for these really low rent mm-hmm. straight to video mm-hmm. movies for some company. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of them, I think it was called like Zombie Nation or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he complained about it not having any zombies in it, for one. It was really mm-hmm. a vampire movie. And there were really only two mm-hmm. female vampires mm-hmm. and then a guy. And that was the whole cast. And there was no sense of a nation.
Right.
certainly not a zombie nation.
Right.
And he showed me the trailer. And, I mean, he did a really good job of... Because the trick of doing these trailers is to find the things in the movie that jump out at you and are the interesting moments. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it was so hard because nothing jumped out. Mm-hmm. And he had to watch this movie multiple times to find the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in watching the trailer, he basically was using the same 3 or 4 moments
that's really fun.
From the movie and mixing and matching them up and redo it to like make the trailer seem awesome.
I want to get back and talk about Sharknado for a second, or that genre, but you did remind me of a story of, I dated a girl in the early 20s whose job it was to watch all of Frasier, every episode of Frasier,
uh-huh.
and every episode of Sister, Sister, and pull those clips that you're talking about, the moments that in syndication they can sell them for. So, but her job was to sit and watch and take notes and stuff like that. And what was fascinating was at the end of doing that, so maybe it was months of watching those two shows.
Sure.
She grew to hate Kelsey Grammer. Like, just the tone of his voice was too much for her. She hated the tone of him, his comedy, everything about him. Couldn't watch another moment of him, but grew to love Jack A.
Interesting.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? That she was like, she would tell me, she would have long conversations with me where she would explain to me how funny Jack A is. And by the way, very smart chick. This was like a funny improv chick. Right. But she said that Jack A was the real deal. And I just thought that was so fascinating.
Well, if you have that kind of intimate relationship, mm-hmm. like if your job is watching mm-hmm. one show all mm-hmm. day, you would develop certain certain opinions that the average person... Well, I mean, it's like if you go to the movies a lot, you become more critical, naturally critical of mm-hmm. them, unless you're my in-laws.
Right. And then you just love everything?
You love everything, except the stuff that I like. Right, like, that's how I gauge mm-hmm. if they see a movie and I'm wondering about it. I'm like, hey, did you guys like it? Loved it. It was great.
You're not going?
Not going.
That's really great.
And if they hated it, I'm like, checking that out.
all right. So, well, new advertiser. We are Today we are sponsored by the movie For Love or Money. In this sparkling romantic comedy, a hotel concierge, Michael J. Fox, falls for the mistress of a shady investor and must choose between his lifelong dream and the love of his life.
Wow.
So check that out. For Love or Money. It's actually in the correct aspect ratio.
Oh, wow.
For those of you at home who
really
that is
worried.
Important to.
That's very interesting. That's cool that you have them as a sponsor and we happen to... I mean, did you plan that out? I mean, you didn't know...
Serendipitous, my friend.
What was going to be in my gigantic movie collection when I brought it over.
So let's talk about Sharknado.
Okay. Which one?
Well, the first one, which I did watch.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm interested in.
Sure.
Is how do you make that movie? And what I mean by that is... When you're making decisions, because the goal is to make a terrible movie, which we know is Sharknado. Okay, so when you're making that movie, how do you hire the director? Like, how do you read the script?
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking at it through to determine whether this is the right choice or the wrong choice? Because along the way, there's 1,000 choices that need to be made when you make a movie.
Sure.
What are you doing when you're trying to make a terrible movie? When you meet three directors,
right.
Are you like, well, this person
is
a meth addict.
Yeah.
Let's have him helm it. Like, how are you aware? How much irony is going on and how much is just
a... That's
just
a really good question. I read this whole article about Asylum.
Yeah.
Which is one of these companies that makes these movies basically for the Sci-Fi Channel that does mashups of creatures.
Right,
it's all about cost and timing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they just, it's sort of like Corman's old movie factory.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, you know, if somebody's willing to work for next to nothing and they can get them and they, you know, went to film school or something, then they'll... And I think that some of these, like, I don't know about Sharknado, but I feel like whoever directed it probably had a hand in writing it and all that stuff. My theory about the original Sharknado is this. The makers of the film, maybe probably a couple of buddies, screenwriter and a filmmaker, were at a bar on the Santa Monica Pier.
Mm-hmm.
And John Hurd was...
Happened to be
literally
there. Yeah.
Drunk.
Yeah. I find this story believable.
And they were like, hey... Aren't you John Hurd?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, I'm John Hurd. And they probably bought him a drink, and they were talking to him, and they were like, hey, can we put you in a movie? And he was like, yeah, as long as it shoots here at this bar so I can sit here and drink.
Yeah, yeah. He's not aware he's in a movie.
I don't think so.
He's not aware of the cameras and the lighting.
No, I don't think so. Although I was – I saw – this other movie just the other day called Would You Rather, which is a horror movie, like take on that improv-y children's game, you know, where people, would you rather do this horrible thing or this horrible thing, and then whatever they choose, they have to do.
Right.
Is a kind of a good idea for an economic horror movie that takes place all in one room with people at a table, including Jeffrey Combs and Amber Brooks, whoever the lead
Amber
girl,
Alert.
Amber Alert. Mm-hmm. She, you know, produced it, and John Hurd was one of the guys playing an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic.
And ooh, that part is a stretch.
Yeah,
that last part is going to take some line readings.
Would you rather? Yeah, it was like, would you rather drink this wine or this entire thing of scotch now that you've been sober for 10 years or something?
Right.
He goes for the scotch, which was amusing enough. But he seemed more cognizant of a movie happening around him. And you know, he's an old New York theater guy, and it kind of had that feeling of theater.
Have you auditioned with him? A couple times I've auditioned with him.
With him?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't think
I ever have. He's exactly how you imagine he's going to be. okay, well, we're close to the end. We like to wrap it up with a speed round where I just find movies that you brought. I just say them. You give me a sentence, one sentence thought.
Okay.
Okay? Here we go. Thelma and Louise.
Okay, movie with two ladies.
Okay. Assassins.
Assassins, that's got Antonio Banderas saying no more chit-chat.
Right. Three Kings.
Great movie with David O. Russell, who directed a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial that I was in.
Is that true? That David is O'Rourke true. Something? That's funny. I did one with Lasse Hallström, who directed My Life as a Dog.
What was it for?
Yeah. It was for Microsoft. But yeah, you do occasionally meet those like, oh, you direct, what are you
what
doing?
Are you doing? What are you doing? Well, and I was terrified because you hear all these stories about
David
O'Russell.
So this is post Three Kings? He was directing
this is a couple years ago.
Yeah.
This is before... This is within his like sort of David O. Russell comeback.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was just paying the bills.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated. I don't know if you went in on this, but I, a few years ago, do you remember the movie where the guy from the American History X?
Sure, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was about neo-Nazis and stuff like that.
What's his face?
The director.
Tony.
Tony. Let's say Tony.
Tony.
Okay. Yeah. So I had heard a lot about that movie, and basically in the end, it was not his vision of a movie. And so he walked. He was like, this is not what I want. I am an artist. I cannot stand
for
this.
Well, and he was pissed at Ed Norton because
exactly.
Ed Norton was sort of pushing the thing in one way and the other.
But it was not his vision, and that was it. So that's where I left off on my knowledge until I walked into this audition, which was at the Silent Movie Theater, which is odd.
Uh-huh.
And it was a K's commercial, a jewelry commercial, where it was Santa Claus's and Mrs. Claus's. And the commercial was basically me trying to sell something to the Santa and me saying, like, oh, is there somebody special that you have in mind? And him saying, oh. And then him giving the diamond ring to his Mrs. Claus.
Sure.
What was great about it was that when you watched it on TV, it was the most archetypical, terrible K's commercial you've ever seen in your life, directed by Tony, who had walked off another movie because it wasn't his vision. So there was some sort of break in his mind between the idea of, like, these are the movies that I make, and it has to be my vision, or I'm going to just pay the bills, and I don't care.
Was he kind of rough to work with?
You know,
was he...
I didn't shoot it. I also didn't get cast. But he... It was a weird one where...
Because he has a reputation.
Yeah, where there were 10 of us on stage, and we walked forward saying, is there a little lady you're thinking of? And then the next guy would say, is there a little lady? And he would... He cast it from that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's
crazy.
Weird. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we're almost done with the speed round.
We got hung up there.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. That's part of the podcast. We like to segue.
Okay.
Yeah, but also tight.
Yeah, you got to keep it tight.
Yep. All right, to live and die in L.A.
Ah, William Peterson, early William Peterson. Mm-hmm. Fun movie with Willem Dafoe, Counterfeiting Money.
Yep. Into the Storm.
Into the Storm. Found footage twister movie with Matt Walsh, who's got probably the best death scene in any disaster movie.
Really?
Ever, in that
I did not know
somewhat
that.
Weak twister movie.
And finally, Foul Play and Seems Like Old Times.
Well, this is Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn,
right.
Back when Chevy Chase was funny, and Goldie Hawn has always been charming.
I do feel like Chevy is now trying to make us go back and look at those movies and realize that he's not that funny. Like, I just recently watched Fletch, which is the movie, if you ask me immediately, gun to my head, this is a bizarre scenario, but gun to my head, what's your favorite movie, which we'll get to at the end because that's how we always end the podcast.
With guns?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow.
I would say Fletch. I think that's changed now. I think it's Shawshank Redemption with maybe a little side order of Goodfellas. But,
sure.
But Fletch, from me being 15 to 35.
Great
was,
one.
All right. I went back and watched Fletch recently, and it is good. Actually, the story is pretty well constructed. However, you can tell that Chevy Chase is not as awesome as you think he is, because now you've seen him be terrible for the last 20 years.
Right.
So you can look back and be like, oh, he was sort of doing that back then, but we just kind of bought it and just loved him for it.
Yeah. It doesn't... That sort of performance that he does where it's sort of winky, Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm better than this, but yeah. Let's have fun anyway. Mm-hmm. Kind of winky thing that he did in a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. It doesn't age well.
No.
It doesn't age well. It's not a good acting technique, no. as it turns out. Although I will say this. I saw the new Vacation movie.
Yeah.
You know, critically hated, didn't do well at the box office. Not as bad as all that. It's a very uneven movie, but it has some good bits. But he has like a cameo, mm-hmm. sort of one sequence cameo in mm-hmm. it. And he looks deeply unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's really, like, I thought he was big on Community. Mm-hmm. But he's like twice the size.
Wow.
I mean, like, he does not look good.
Yeah.
That said,
yeah,
he was doing like old Chevy Chase, and not even that Fletch Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. Like the old SNL Chevy Chase,
yeah.
and really Vacation,
yeah.
where he's doing that bumbly, fumbly, yeah. dropping
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
how does he get? How did he get it like that? And mm-hmm. how does he? Like he does some old Chevy Chase, and I was like, oh, and it made me laugh. And I was like, oh
that's
shit,
nice.
Wow,
that's nice.
Wow, it was really weird.
That's
great. It was really weird.
All right, well, we have come to the end of our podcast. One last question:
mm-hmm.
What is your favorite movie and why?
You know, my go-to answer for that, because I get asked that a lot, is usually a John Carpenter's The Thing, because mm-hmm. it is one of my favorite movies.
Okay.
But in the last couple years, the movie that I'm going to the most,
mm-hmm.
when I'm in a bad mood or
mm-hmm.
I just need to get away,
mm-hmm.
you know, for an hour and a half, is Hot Tub Time Machine.
Oh, very nice.
I really like that movie.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for being a guest, Anton, and coming in at the last second.
Of course. I'm sorry Steven couldn't make it.
Well, next week we have Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh,
he'll be
great.
Bringing in his movie collection. We'll be talking to him. But until then, we will see you at the DVD player.